Hello and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrekin, and joining me today is a very special guest. You know him, you love him. He is the midfielder out there doing the hard work, one Maxi Rodriguez, new to the team, new to our hearts, and he's here now in the amber and blue. Maxi, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Now, listen, you have been one of those players that everyone has their eyes on this year, maybe for good, maybe for bad. I know that's a lot of pressure to start things off with, but you were the big signing of the offseason for this club. So just to kind of get things integrated here, first and foremost, how has it been adjusting here in the Ocean State?
It's been good. I've enjoyed it. I know there's a lot of pressure with being that kind of signing, but just trying to find my feet, and I finally feel like I found my feet, and yeah, just trying to be myself and bring kind of what I can bring to the team, and hopefully we can get some wins here soon and things can go upwards.
Any sights or bites that you've been able to experience, or has it been, you know, just getting straight to work and you haven't had a chance to be a tourist yet here in the in Rhode Island?
Yeah, I think me and my fiance have been waiting for warmer weather for sure. It's been cold for a while, and then we got some nice warm weather, and then today, of course, it's cold and rainy. So we get little warm weather here every so often. We take the dog on nice little walks on sunny days, but we haven't been to the beach and stuff like that. So that's what we're excited for sure.
I mean, you must be a huge fan of the Heat. You're from San Antonio, Texas. You got to play with San Antonio FC back in 2017. You went on to play for the Richmond Kickers and then, of course, Detroit City FC. I know it's an early impression then, and it kind of sounds like you haven't gotten a fair shake yet on what Rhode Island has to offer. But where would you rank the vibe check so far across those four places in terms of your soccer career?
It's funny because I think for me, when I lived in San Antonio, I wanted to get out of San Antonio so badly. But as you get older, and now I have nephews and nieces and stuff like that, obviously I want to like to be close to them in the next 10 years, hopefully live home. But it's definitely up there. I know my fiance is loving it here. She loves the idea of New England and stuff like that. So she likes the fact that we represent a whole state. It's not just one city. She finds that really cool. So do I. So yeah, it's definitely up there. Excited for definitely the summer. They say the summers here are amazing. Hopefully go to a couple NFL games, NBA games in New England. So yeah, we're excited for all that for sure.
What are your sports allegiances beyond the beautiful game?
Basketball, Spurs fan. It's kind of the only thing we had in San Antonio. And thankfully growing up, they were very, very good. And hopefully on the rise again. And then NFL, unfortunately, I'm a Cowboys fan, so yeah, that's tough.
But I mean, it's tough for you, it's not tough for the fans of New England.
Yeah, I think it's both. People look down on Cowboy fans, which is understandable. We're not the most loved fan base, so
we're just confused at the loyalty and the enthusiasm behind a team that hasn't won in a long time. That's the trickery of it, you know. That's where it gets a little difficult.
Yeah, but it's good to know that I stayed with them through all these bad years. So that just means I'm a loyal person. So that helps.
How about baseball? Is that, I mean, there's quite a few good teams that have come out of the Texas systems. Is baseball a thing for you, or you're only into the other two?
So I got into baseball in college because I would hang out with a lot of the baseball guys there. And growing up, my grandpa was a huge baseball guy. So I like watching baseball. I'll watch baseball every night if it's on TV. But I don't necessarily have that one team. I think I like players and stuff like that growing up. I like guys like Jeter and Alex Rodriguez, and then there's Big Papi Ortiz, stuff like that. I think I like personalities and kind of interesting watching like their documentaries and what their mindset was when they were players, and now they're not players, now they're commentators. So yeah, I think I like players rather than teams.
Does that transfer over to the game that you play? Of course, you play here in the USL Championship, but then there's so many different leagues that you can invest watching the beautiful game. Do you follow players or do you follow teams when it comes to your fandom of soccer?
A bit of both. I get a lot of stick from the guys because my number one team is Barca. Barca's been my team since I discovered that there's soccer outside of Liga MX when I was 13 years old. And then obviously watching the Prem so much, I don't really have a team. And then I fell in love with Cesc Fabregas, so I became a huge Arsenal fan. And obviously there's a connection between Arsenal and Barca. Barca would get their best players from Arsenal. So I loved Arsenal growing up because of Cesc. Then he went to Barca. Barca for me was the number one because of Ronaldinho and the commercials and all that stuff. So I have those two teams, which I get a lot of stick for having two teams, but I'll always say that Barca is my number one team. But I do fall in love with players and how they play. I'm a huge Barca fan, but I'll be the first person to tell you I love the way that Jude plays or the way that Toni Kroos played when he was with Real Madrid. So yeah, I think I'm a huge fan of those two teams, but I'll respect and love the way a certain player plays, no matter who he plays for.
Do you have a natural affinity to watch the players and lift up the players that play in the similar positions as you, or do you look at it as more of a you recognize just the talent that you see and that's how you fall in love with those types of players? I'm always curious, like, you know, a cook always critiques his own meals that he prepares and then he judges the way other chefs prepare. Do you see the tree amongst the forest and vice versa?
Yeah, I think I see it both ways. I think I see certain players and see the qualities that they have that I wish I had, and I'm like, man, that player is unbelievable. And then I see the players that I can see a bit of their game in me or me in their game. So I think I gravitate towards center mids and respect what they do or how they do it or how long they can sustain playing at such a high level. So yeah, I think it's a bit of both. And then I look at defenders and for me, the idea of waking up and they have this love of having to defend, I find so respectable because it's like I wake up and I'm like, I want to score goals or be in attack. And they wake up and say, I don't want to let the ball go in the back of the net, which I think is like to think that before trying to score a goal is insane to me. But the way they just love doing that, I think is very honorable and respectful. So cool.
So let's get back to your home roots, back to Texas. You miss it now. What do you miss the most from home? Like, is it a food thing? Is it puffy tacos, maybe? I've had puffy tacos from San Antonio. Those are pretty good. Like, what is it about the vibe of San Antonio? Food, something else?
I think it's just the culture. I think there's a big Hispanic culture, but I think mainly it's just my family. And when I get my family, I get the food. So my mom's cooking is the best I've ever had, and I don't think I'll ever have anything that comes even close to it, even if I try to cook it myself. So I think just being around family, it's just a huge part of me and who I am, and the reason I am where I am is because of them. So yeah, I think family is the thing I miss the most for sure.
I read an article about you out of your time at North Carolina at Charlotte, where you were dabbling in tennis, I believe. You loved improving your culinary skills in front of friends and family, and your brother's a big part of your overall ecosystem in life. How much of that is still true today, you know, looking back now? I don't want to date you on the amount of time since that, but how much of that is true still?
The tennis, I had taken a beginning tennis class, which was part of my Canis major, which I ended up having to switch majors. That's a whole different story. But my fiance isn't sorry, but she's not very good at tennis, but she enjoys playing tennis in the summer. She's gonna hate me for that. But so every now and then I'll get out and play tennis with her. We'll take the dog too. He's the best person to fetch the balls. Or sorry, best dog to fetch the balls.
Hey, dogs are people.
Yeah, exactly. He's right here, by the way.
Mine's taking a nap behind me here.
Yeah, I'm just hoping this guy doesn't cry to go out because it's raining and I'm on a podcast. The second thing was I like cooking. I don't like cooking for people because I think as an athlete, I would cook to survive. Kind of rice, chicken, vegetables. I can eat that every day, and I did for a long time. And obviously, I met my now fiance and she does not want to eat that every meal, and I understand that. So I've learned a lot of different things, but sometimes when you get home from training and you're tired, and chicken and rice and veggies are the easiest thing to cook. So I think I'm better at cooking for myself than for others. And my brother is a huge part of my life. Everyone in my family is. He's got kiddos running around now, so he's very busy with his life. But yeah, I talk to him once a week on the phone and text me after games and stuff like that. That's a big thing that I do, I call my mom and dad after every game, FaceTime them before the game. I run on the field and kind of show them the stadium, whether it's home or away. Show them that you wish me luck, and then I call them after. So,
has the family been out to see you perform in one of the games, whether away or home, yet?
They've seen away, not this year. My dad is a very traditional Hispanic guy, where he's stubborn, doesn't leave the house, in the sense of like he's very comfortable in his kind of routine, and so the only time he's come out is maybe when I played in San Antonio. He loves a good gambling trip in Vegas, so he came to the Vegas game, of course, and a couple other ones. So I know that they're constantly watching, so for them to have to come all the way over here is not a huge thing for me. I know that they're supporting me, watching every game, and my dad will, even tomorrow we play at 4, or when we play on Saturday 4, he won't be able to watch the game because he's working, but as soon as he gets home, puts the replay on and watches it. So, yeah, haven't been able. Hopefully they come out to Rhode Island, because the stadium is too nice for them not to come.
Yeah, it's also tough that both Vegas and both of the Texas teams this year all come to Centerville Bank Stadium. So missed opportunity here in year one, but hopefully they do get to come out. You know, I want to touch into your prior season, you know, your time with Detroit City FC. First and foremost, you know, I look back at kind of the player profile you created for yourself. You were easily a fan favorite. You're now labeled as one of the City Centurions, being one of the few players with the organization that have over 100 matches with Detroit City. And you've been with them for a long time, all the way through their time when they were with, was it NISA, and moving into the USL Championship. Before all of that, though, you told me something really impactful when we first met. You told me that during COVID that you were not sure you were going to continue your professional career because you were doing, I think you said, like UPS delivery driving because of the unstableness of what was going on in the world with the pandemic. You weren't even sure at one point if you had already hung your boots up for the final time. And then you go on to have this career with DCFC. What was that all like? Like, that must have been, not a lot of players have that story, Maxi.
Yeah, it's quite a unique situation. I left Richmond Kickers kind of with the desire to return to the USL Championship. I had captained the side. We didn't do so well, but I felt like I finally got minutes under my belt, and it was something that a lot of coaches said that I lacked. So I felt like I got a lot of minutes. I learned how to kind of be a leader in a situation which wasn't the greatest because we weren't winning games. And then felt like I was good enough to be in a USL Championship. So the agent I had at the time said, hey, things are looking good. Teams are going to be interested. And like every player in the USL experiences, there's times where you wait. And people were asking me, hey, where are you going, blah, blah, blah. And of course, you have this secondhand embarrassment of like, man, like no one's calling my agent. No one's asking about me. No one's sending contract. No one's even thinking about sending me an offer. And then, yeah, it comes to January, February, everyone's having preseason. I actually go to preseason with San Antonio FC, a team that I had already been signed for. So that was another difficult situation that I kind of had to go through. And then they ended up saying, hey, we're not going to sign you, but we think you'll be fine. You'll land a team, which it's like, great. But hey, no one wanted me after that. So then I kind of get in this state of mind where it's like, man, I think I'm going to hang them up. No team wants me. You see guys posting about preseason and their season get it going. It's kind of, man, doesn't look good for me. No one's really asking about me. Club that I'd already been signed for asked me in preseason, didn't sign me. And then COVID happened. And then that kind of gave me the chance to be like, hey, I'm not playing, but no one else is playing either. Kind of an opportunity to be like, well, I have nothing to lose. I can take this bag of balls that I have right now in my car, go train, which I did every day. It's kind of a situation where I looked in the mirror and said, hey, I want to go out the way on my own terms rather than coaches saying you're not good enough or we didn't want you. So I trained every day, twice a day. And then it got to a point where I started working for UPS, doing DoorDash. I'd wake up early, train probably like at 5:30 in the morning, get back around 7, go work for UPS until 2, go train again. And yeah, just doing that for months on end until one day Trevor James from Detroit calls me and says, "Hey, I know who you are. I've seen you play. We're joining this league called NISA. We think that you're a good player, and I know you're trying to get in the USL Championship, but come check it out, see if you like it." And yeah, the rest is kind of history. So it went from, okay, I'll play in Detroit for a year. If things don't work out, then I was already not playing. I'll retire. I'm going out on my own terms while still trying to play that 1 year in NISA, and then yeah, get a kind of a normal job, and things kind of worked out for me. And I'm a big believer that God does everything for a reason, put me through tough situations to then put you in better situations. So yeah, I guess it all worked out in the end.
Did Trevor have early conversations with you that there were the aspirations to make the jump to USL Championship one day, or was that completely out of your purview? And at the time, it was like, hey, here's a contract and I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah, I don't think they had any idea that at that time that they were going to go USL Championship. I think that they had joined NISA and they were kind of seeing how that league was going. I know they had aspirations for to do good things, but yeah, I think it was just kind of like, give me the paper, I'll sign, and let me just play and be in that environment and training with other people. When I was just training by myself for the last six to 8 months was amazing. So yeah, I think it was just, I'm just happy to be here training. I don't care what league it is. I just want to have fun and try to do my best.
I have to ask, is it almost ironic that you look back at that time and you couldn't get someone to pick up the phone, and now you go on to be, all league first team USL Championship just a few years later, lots of different organizations looking to bring you into their blueprint. Is there an irony that you can appreciate about that? I know it's not everyone's success story, but it definitely applies to you. Do you look back and just like not help but laugh at this point?
Yeah, I think I bring it up all the time, like with my fiance or with my parents, and sometimes there's still moments where it's like an imposter syndrome where I don't understand how I'm here or how I'm scoring goals and stuff like that. So I think it's just shows that if you work hard and do the little things right, then good things can happen and stuff like that. So I just try to do the right things, and hopefully it ends in success or yeah. But yeah, I still can't believe sometimes the situation I'm in or what's gone on the last couple of years. But yeah, it's been awesome. My parents are happy and a big reason why I'm here in this situation.
A lot of accolades, a lot of awards, a lot of hardware won with Detroit City. If I could ask you, what's the core memory for you from your time with Detroit?
I think the Columbus game in the Open Cup. I scored two goals and
The
we won it.
brace, yeah.
Yeah, scored two goals and we played against a good side. And I think before playing that game, realizing, look, a couple of years ago I didn't have a team and I was living at my parents' house, not knowing if I was ever gonna play again, to then scoring a brace against an MLS team, was just kind of full circle for me, going, look, no matter what happens, no one can take this away from me. No one can tell me I wasn't good enough. And yeah, it was a special night, as well as obviously winning a couple of trophies is cool. But yeah, that night was really special.
When you look back at your time, one of the things I'm always the most curious about when there's a player who becomes the franchise player, right? Like the name that sells some of the most kits or is in all the branding, you very much strike that as, to me at least, as the player for Detroit. You now are playing with us. I'm curious, what are the motivations? What are the things that happen for a player like that when they start looking for their next opportunity and it's not with the club that they've grown up with, so to speak? How does that work for a player in general? And what was it that made you even want to look beyond Keyworth Stadium in the first place?
Yeah, I think it was something that I had been thinking about as my contract was expiring. I just, for me, I've always wanted to be challenged. I felt like whenever I was put in a challenging situation is when I played my best. And I think at times, Detroit last year, any year, you can feel comfortable or too comfortable. And for me, that was the last thing I ever wanted was to feel too comfortable. And I, like I said, I think challenges bring out the best in me. And I went to a situation where 3 years ago, like you said, or 3 years before, no club was calling me or asking for me, to a situation now where my agent's like, a lot of clubs are interested. So for me, that was the first time as a free agent where I was a desirable free agent, where I wasn't going, okay, well, I'll wait in December, January to see who wants to sign me. Now it was maybe a couple months left in the season where teams were like, hey, this team asked about you, this team asked about you. And I still could not comprehend how that was happening, that imposter syndrome again. So I had obviously had thought about it the year before and talked to my fiance and didn't really have a complete answer whether I was going to stay or leave. And then things go on throughout the season, whether it's with Detroit or maybe at the end talking to Rhode Island about the project. It felt like it was the right time for me to leave. And I said it from the beginning, I've said it multiple times. For me, I wanted to be sold on a project as well as to be rewarded for the hard work that I had done over the last 3, 4 years of not being considered one of the top players. And now you are. And I think there's a lot of situations where there's players that get left, or players that don't get re-signed to clubs, and people go, oh, he did so much for us, thank you for that. And the player wanted to stay, and no one ever tells a club, hey, why didn't you re-sign him? Blah, blah, blah. But when a player doesn't want to re-sign with a club, it's ultimately like, oh, he didn't want to be here. Like, that's messed up. So I had multiple friends that didn't get re-signed that I felt like should have been re-signed sometimes. And that's just the nature of the business. But somehow a player doesn't re-sign somewhere, and sometimes they're looked down or said they left because of money, because of this, he's greedy, stuff like that. So I think at the end of the day, you want to be valued as a player and as a person. And sometimes you have to make decisions for your future. And it was the first time that I can make a decision where it will benefit not only me, but my fiance, not for the next 2 years, but further on. So yeah, I think it was time, and my fiance gave me the go ahead of let's go wherever you need to go, which I think was obviously very nice. And yeah, helped me make the decision, and I fully 100% believe it was the right one.
I kind of look back, you know, and knowing what a little I know about the free agency process, I know that there's a certain time span to where you can start having discussions with clubs while you're still playing in your current season. You scored a goal against Rhode Island FC in the first game when you were playing, when we were at the college stadium at Bern. But were there conversations that had already started to kind of take shape, or at least initial introductions when you saw them again when we went to you at Keyworth? Like, were you? You know, and I'm sure this was happening with other teams as well. Like, as you started playing these teams deeper into the season, was part of it also kind of the sample size you got of who you were playing against on those game day decisions?
No, to be honest, I didn't know until later on in the year. I think myself as well as Rhode Island, I think we were so focused on our own teams and getting into the playoffs, as well as I think we were competing for that 4 or 5 spot to host a playoff game. So it didn't happen until way later. But yeah, for me, I think I told my agent early on that I just wanted to focus on playing. You can do whatever you need to do, but I kind of just want to focus on playing my best football. I think there was a time in the middle of the year last year where I struggled because I had such a bright start that I wasn't scoring goals anymore. I know people were like, oh, he stopped scoring, blah, blah, blah. And then I finally found my form again and ended the year really strong. So for me, I wanted to focus on having a strong ending. I always told my agent, my job is to handle stuff on the field so that your stuff off the field is easy. So yeah, I like to focus on just the football, and then once that's done, kind of figure out my future and stuff like that. So yeah, try to find the balance at the end of the year and right when the season ended on how to figure all that out.
You know, you mentioned a second ago when the decision is in your hands, you know, a player can sometimes look like the villain because fans don't have the access. They don't have the understanding of what is a priority for a player. I kind of want to touch into it because we saw some of it, and the Rhode Island fan community was a little bit puzzled by it. Your game against Detroit, it was supposed to be a sort of homecoming. It wasn't the best result for Rhode Island FC for a lot of different reasons. But one of the curious things about it was the way that you were received by the supporter group, by the fans. Detroit is a notoriously difficult place to play. I wouldn't expect anything less than a little bit of gamesmanship and trying to get under one of their former players. But were you surprised at the level of, I don't want to call it turned opinion, but it didn't seem like the same kind of outreach that I would feel like a Rhode Island FC group would give to any alumni player. Were you at all shocked by that?
Yeah, in a sense, I was pretty surprised. I knew that there was obviously going to be some shit talking and stuff like that, which is what they do. I understood that completely. I think there are certain moments where it was a bit surprising, and I think it was tougher for me because then talking to my parents, who don't understand it completely, are hearing the boos or the FU maxis, and it's tough to explain to them, hey, no, that's what they do and stuff like that, or even some of the stuff on social media after was tough, which, look, I see it. It doesn't affect me like so much to the point where it's going to break me down. And I think a lot of people saw me upset on the bench. It's not because of that. It's because of how the game went. I really wanted a really competitive game. I was excited to be there. So to go a man down so early, to also not play my best, if I'm being honest, was obviously, at the end of the day, I'm there to play and try to win. So I think you can tell I wear my heart on my sleeve when it comes to playing. If I'm not playing well, that's why I'm upset. None of the outside noise obviously is frustrating, upsetting, but it's never going to be the main reason why I'm upset. I want to play well. I put a lot of pressure on myself to play well. So when I don't, it's tough for me. So when it comes to the outside noise, I saw it coming, but it did go to a point where I was like, oh, that's a bit surprising. So
do you use that as motivation? I mean, I know you said you look at it, you're aware that it exists, but like, do you see that and then turn it into fuel to say, hey, you know what? Like, you guys still have to come down for the away leg. I'm going to repay this favor when Detroit City comes down to Centerville Bank Stadium.
Yeah, I think any player that goes through that situation doesn't use it as motivation is lying. I think for me, I try to find any little thing to keep me so motivated. Like I said, I think the biggest enemy of being a player is complacency, and I find little motivations like that, or San Antonio came and they were my hometown club, or any club that I emailed during COVID that didn't respond or said no to a trial. I remember all of these moments. So I always try to find little motivation and stuff like that. So for them to do that, and not only that, but I felt like the week before Detroit, I finally felt training wise myself. So leading up to it, I'm expecting, okay, I'm going to play well. It's going to be nice. I'll see some of my old friends. To then not play well is obviously was tough for me. So I think that I got home after that trip and said, okay, like I have to go and be myself, and I have to make sure I'm doing everything outside of the field to do that. So I kind of lit a fire under me that I maybe needed. And yeah, I felt like it's helped me ever since.
You got that Michael Jordan in you. You just take things, you find that personal motivation through every little interaction you have.
Yeah, 100%. I think it helps me be myself, and sometimes playing a little angry or upset or something to prove is when I play my best though.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, getting into your time and your performances so far with Rhode Island FC, I started things off by kind of calling you the guy. I don't know if that's a fair label or assumption to make, if that insults the other starting 10 players, but you were definitely the spotlighted transfer of the off season. Want to ask first, you know, how has it been integrating in? Have you felt any expectations around that? Have there been any conversations around the locker room? How's been the overall fit for you as you've been both the guy and the new guy coming into this team in 2025?
Yeah, I don't think it's anyone ever telling me something or people talking about it. I think I initially built that in my head. So then it made me sometimes overthink it. I think it's normal. People talk about you being a big signing and stuff like that, which obviously is very new to me. So I think internally I may have built the situation up in my head when other people were kind of not really believing in that or trying to go into the hype. They just wanted me to be myself. I think the coaching staff has helped me tremendously to think that of just be myself, do what you do. Don't try to put these expectations on yourself, even though I do. I think Kano, Coase, everyone has helped me tremendously to just say, hey, be yourself. And the players as well. I think there's such a young squad that I think sometimes they see me frustrated and they're like, why are you frustrated? Or Koke as a leader speaks Spanish as well, so it's perfect. Has helped me to just be like, look, you need to just be yourself. Don't think about what you did in the past. Just think about what you're doing now. So there's been little moments or conversations where they helped me tremendously. And I think Clay on away trips, he is the epitome of like the chillest dude you'll ever meet. Like he will legit be like, I'll be like bringing up a question. He's like, dude, just like play soccer. And I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? He's like, that's how simple he sees it, which is cool to see his perspective. And I think something like that has helped me tremendously of like, you're right. Like, I don't even know why I'm stressing to play so well or do this or do that. It's just play. And when I play with, whether it's a little bit angry, but I have to play with a smile with me enjoying it, and then I can play my best football.
I think you get a 10 out of 10 for the Clay impersonation there. I don't think I've heard a better one yet. Not even Noah can get as close of an impersonation. You know, speaking to the players that you've started to kind of maybe acclimate to, is there, one of the things I always hear out of the locker room is how closely knit this group of guys is, how great the community is amongst the players, the player wives and girlfriends. Curious for you, have there been any early friendship bonds, beyond just everyone is in, you know, a good state? Do you have those initial ride or die friendships that you're making now that you've been here for a bit?
I mean, I think I'm pretty close to everyone. I think as the season has gone on, it's been like amazing. I don't think there's like any really clicks. I think everyone gets along with everyone. I think I gravitated towards Jackson, one, because he's my locker buddy, but as well as his sense of humor. We have the same sense of humor, which is funny. I think as soon as both of our, my fiance and his girlfriend saw each other talking, they're like, oh, here, yep, he talks about him all the time, stuff like that. I think Noah, I spent the first couple weeks preseason with him in a room, and I've never met someone who wakes up with that amount of energy. So I grew close to him, and then now Clay, rooming with Clay and playing a couple rounds of golf with him has been great. Grant is one of my good friends as well now. So, yeah, there's no one on this team really that I wouldn't consider them a friend. It's like we're all super tight-knit. We all make jokes. I can room with anyone on the road, and it's completely comfortable. So it's been fun. I've been getting kind of bullied when it comes to being the old guy, which is hilarious because I don't think I've ever been on a team where 29 is the oldest guy on the team.
I had to, you said that at the press conference, and I believed you, but I had to go back for some reason in my mind. I thought Koke was the senior, and it did not. I was very surprised that it was you. Do you get like, the cane left in your locker room? Do you get, like Ben Gay left in the locker? Like what's the biggest prank they've used against your age?
I mean, if I get on the training table for any type of massage or treatment, they're like, oh, there's the knees, huh? There's the grandpa knees. I mean, if you have Koke call me grandpa and he's like 2 months younger than me. Like, I don't even think
it's not much. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not much. So I think they can take any ammo and try to use it, but normally they try to attack me on the training table if I'm getting treatment.
And then, I'll lean into it. I'll bite from the apple here for a second. As the old man, I look at this run of form. You're now in five games over these 14 days. How's the body holding up? What are the tricks? What are the secrets of a professional athlete to be able to go the distance and, minimize the wear and tear on the body over this course of period?
Yeah, I joke around with some of the guys because some guys get pretty sore, and to be fair, as much as maybe some games I look pretty tired, the next day I don't wake up too sore, and I tell them it's because I'm not very fast. Like, I'm not a very fast player. I'm not changing speed at an alarming rate. My hamstrings don't have to do a lot of work because I'm not running very fast, so I think that helps me out. Rhode Island has unbelievable resources when it comes to what we do off the field. They got me some tights that I'm wearing right now. We did cryo. We do some red light therapy that I've never done. So I might be aging backwards at this point. But yeah. And also the best part about, I told a couple of guys this, like the best part about playing game is you could eat whatever you want, in a sense of like, they're telling you eat, drink water, sleep. And I'm going, listen, my problem is that I eat too much. So you're telling me I can eat more. And I don't have to practice, really. We just go game, recover, game. So I'm a big fan of that because practice is just not as fun as the game. So you're telling me that we have a game, we kind of chill for 2 days and then another game. It's like I would do midweek games every week if it were up to me.
I've heard from multiple players that the training sessions can be in times more brutal than the performances on the pitch and less rewarding because – you're not getting a result in front of fans. Is there any truth to that here with this Rhode Island side?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, you guys see Amos and Clay and Noah like in these games, and our defenders, Grant, Frank, Karifa, you see Jackson, Koke, and Goal. Like, I'd rather be with them. So, like, at training, I don't want Amos running me down whenever I get the ball. I don't want Zach running at me. I don't want to have to defend Noah. So it's way better on the weekends or on during a game than training. Training's way tougher against these guys.
Who's the player this year who's got the alter ego when you have to line up against them and they're just mentally trying to get in your head on every training session, every practice exercise?
I think Grant sometimes. I think Grant holds me really accountable, which is great. So if I lose the ball once, he's on me, which is good. But then I'm like, well, that guy just lost the ball. Where are you getting after him? So he's been good about holding me accountable. I know Karifa, when I first got here, I think me and him had got into it in a game last year. Or I said something that I don't remember. I just get in this flow state where I say some, I think I'm tougher than what I am. So he had remembered some things. He's like, oh, I remember you, my friend. So little things like that. But obviously, we're very cool now. That's my best friend. I think Karifa, every time I play against him, is extremely tough. I think he trains so hard, he plays so hard, and then Grant keeps me very accountable if I lose the ball, which makes me better. So it's been good, challenging, but good.
Is that why you called out Grant when you finally won your first round of soccer tennis? And walk us through, what does it feel like to be a champion?
Feels good. I actually lost today in the final, so I'm actually. Me and Noah were defending our belt. We were about to win and lost in the final. So that he was devastated because it was his fault. Not to throw him under the bus, but it was Noah's fault. But Grant was my partner for a while. And he was like, we're not switching. We're not switching. And then finally he's like, look, we need to switch it up because we're doing so badly together. And then as I switched partners to Noah, he wanted me to fail. He if he got out, it didn't matter as long as I was out. And I kind of wanted to knock him out, even if it meant that I was going to be out. So when I won, I felt like he was upset that I won. So I had to rub it in his face and find that extra motivation. Try to find it even in soccer tennis.
Rivalries born every single day. And just kind of starting to unwind here on just you overall as a person, as a player. I'm always interested in when acquisitions come in. Sometimes it's the pedigree. Sometimes it's for the individual contribution. And sometimes you bring a player in who's going to lift the talent develop the rest of the squad and make everyone better around them. You know, obviously it can be a little bit of everything. You know, that's what you'd want in any signing. What do you feel is kind of, if you had to lean one direction or another in terms of the skill set and the offerings you bring to a team, what have you noticed the most so far? Is it you being relied upon on those big moments, or has it been just seeing everyone else kind of grow around and be better players as they get to play with you as a better player?
I think it's a mixture. I think I enjoy the big moments. I enjoy scoring the goals, but I don't mind if I'm not the one doing it, if that makes sense. I think a lot of players want to be the guy all the time, and I think I learned in Detroit sometimes I had to be the guy all the time, that I didn't enjoy always having to be the guy. I think I like pressure, but I don't like that much pressure of, like, if he doesn't play well, then the team sometimes doesn't play well. So I think if you add me to the players that we have, I think I know how to be the guy when you need me to be the guy. If it doesn't mean all the time, then I think better. That means the team's doing well and they don't always have to rely on me, as well as the experience that I bring, both when I didn't have a club or when I was doing well. I think those moments in my career can really help someone, whether it's put an arm around a guy or holding a guy accountable or lifting the guy because he's doing the right things. I think I can pick and choose when to be each person, or when to be the comedic relief or the butt of the joke or stuff like that. I think it's really important that me, as a player that's considered a big signing, can also be the butt of the joke, because I need to be in that moment. So I tell a lot of these guys that my career really didn't start until I was 25, 26. So to see what they're doing at a young age, or think, man, I'm not doing enough, it's like, hey, you're doing just fine, and things are only going to get better. So yeah, I think it's a mixture of both things, not to get in a long tangent, but yeah, it's exciting to be a part of this group.
And then, you know, looking at it from, you know, you're the old dog. How do you learn new tricks under Coach Cano? What has he been teaching you about yourself? How has your game been improving under Cano and the rest of the technical staff?
I think they just allow me to be myself. I think a lot of overthinking and kind of weird thoughts that I was having at the beginning was me just trying to show how good I can be, rather than just me being myself, and it just reveals in the game. So I think Coach, Dave, Spratty, Cano have all mentioned, just be yourself, play free. Obviously, you've shown the quality that you've had over the last couple of years, so just continue doing that. And when I got back to that and just training like that, I feel like the past couple of games that my performances are getting better and showcasing what I can do on a daily basis more. So yeah, they've been good about, if I kind of needed them to push me a little bit more, they know that they have to push me, as well as I think there's been times where they put their arm around me, like after the Detroit, and say, look, that's not you, that's not why we brought you, you know who you are. And then I went on to play better. So yeah, they've been extremely good with me.
Excellent to hear. And then just to kind of wrap things up, you know, you said this a little bit in the press conference, but I want to expand upon it. You showed a willingness, you showed this eagerness to see the team deliver the first win to all of the fans coming in attendance at Centerville Bank Stadium. Does that put additional pressures or responsibilities on your shoulders, on the team's shoulders, now going into the third game this weekend? This interview won't come out until after the result for Monterey, but is there extra, you know, conversations happening about the importance of getting that first W in front of 10,500 fans?
I don't think it's talked about. I think it's just something that we carry that should be carried. I think there's a responsibility to not always win, but to play hard. And I think the last two games we've been playing hard, been leaving everything out on that field. I think we know that, hey, we have to win a game here for these fans and supporters that are coming out on Saturday, and then Wednesday on a weekday when people are coming from work, like I said before. So I think it's something that we understand. We know that there's things that we have to do in order to get that win. And I think we're focused on doing those things correctly so that it results in a win rather than, hey, we have to win, if that makes sense. So I think we're trending in the right direction. I think the last couple of games, we've really improved our game. You can see that we're flowing a lot better. You can see that we're creating more chances. So I think if we continue to do those things, the results will come. But if we take our foot off the gas and don't pay attention to details, then we can't expect to win. So yeah, just focusing on those things.
And then just kind of final question here, a fun one. There's been a lot of talk around the locker room about your abilities on a golf course. Some say it's top-notch, some say there's a lot to be left wanting. Where do you personally evaluate yourself? And then from what you've known and seen from the guys so far, where do you rank yourself in terms of the rest of the team?
Well, I need to know who's saying those things, by the way.
Unfortunately, I cannot reveal my sources, but I think we both know if someone's going to trash talk you for golfing, they must be at least decently good themselves for golfing.
Yeah,
But I'll also
which
go ahead and say it's Jackson Lee. I owe him
that's
nothing.
crazy. That's crazy coming from him, because when he went, he was just sitting in the cart because he had given up at that point. He was just donating balls to the golf course at that point. He couldn't play a hole if he didn't find a ball because of how many balls he lost. But I think I am the most improved player in North America within the last year and a half, 100%. The amount of money that I donate to driving ranges in the past year and a half has been insane, as well as golf courses. But yeah, I think I'm improving. I think I'm putting in the work to improve, which is key. And I think I will be a scratch golfer in the next 5 years.
So who do you put on the Rushmore of Rhode Island FC players? Obviously, you're including yourself in there. Who are the other three up on that pedestal with you?
This is tough because I think I'm top three. And I
But you,
think
that's fine. We just need four. So you can pick an auxiliary.
I'll put JJ up there for sure. JJ's got a really nice swing. And you could tell he cares about it. Clay's in there. He's a decent golfer, but he's a great vibes guy. He's one of those guys like, look at this. You know what I mean? Look at this. Which you
Just
need one.
chill, bro. It's just golf. Just chill.
Yeah. It's like, look at this. Sun's out. We're playing golf. Who cares? That kind of guy, which is great. Who else? Who's the fourth? The fourth is the toughest.
I've heard it's either Lee or Stoney. Is there any truth to that?
It's definitely not Lee. Stoney, I think, has it in his locker. The first day, he wasn't great. But the second day, because we're cart buddies when we golf, second day, he was much better than me. So I'll put Stoney in there for sure.
Even though he critiques you on the pitch, what do you need that on the golf course as well? Or do you
Yeah,
have to get an
yeah.
alternate like Brito or something like that?
No, I mean, I think Brito would be decent, but I got to go with Stoney.
Okay.
And I think the good part is about on the when we play soccer, I think we're good about, hey, do this, come on, stop losing the ball. But on the golf, you need the opposite. You need, hey, we'll get him next hole. You know what I mean? You need positive vibes. Like if I shank one and he hits one on the green, we're a partnership. We go, yes, you got it on the green, let's go. If your cart buddy is quiet and not very positive, then golf is not fun. Then what are you doing with that guy out there? So
Exactly. Well, Maxi, thank you so much for spending some time for fans to get to know you a little bit better and understand kind of your history, your origin, and now this new look as you have joined us in the 2025 campaign. Any final thoughts, any final words for listeners? Again, they won't get to see this or they won't hear it until a week from now. So besides the Monterey result, anything that you want to tell fans?
no, I just want to say that not only me, but the team appreciates all the support. We're pushing to improve every day. Hopefully, we got the win in Monterey, and hopefully, I bagged a couple goals. That would be awesome. So hopefully, this goes out and that happened. But yeah, appreciate the support. Obviously, thank you for having me on the show and being able to talk about my career and my experiences. it's been fun.
Honor is all mine, and don't worry, I'll edit that part out if it doesn't happen the way we want this to happen. You got to look good at all times. That's
Perfect.
Mission number one. So
perfect.
In the meantime, you can catch all of the soccer news around New England, including RIFC, at The Blazing Musket at www.theblazingmusket.com. You can follow along with us at Raising Anchor on Instagram and at RIFC Podcast on the rest of the social medias. And of course, don't forget to check in for Thursday nights at 8 p.m. for all of our regular podcasts. And you can check those out at RaisingAnchorPodcast.com. Maxi, good luck this weekend. Good luck all of the remainder of your games this season. And we can't wait to have you back on the pod soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.